Hello and welcome to a series of specials of my podcast Helium Talk. I call them the isolation episodes, and for these I'm speaking with people from the art world about the current situation we're all facing these days. I just want to know how artists and gallerists from different countries are dealing with being locked down. My guest today is Carol Berman, main curator at Corey Helford Gallery in Los Angeles, who's currently traveling with the artist Hikari Shimoda. Where are you right now?
I'm in Tokyo. Thanks for having me, by the way. I'm so sorry it took us this long to get this together. And then when we do, it's during a pandemic. So
Yeah, for me, that's also very interesting because you're in Tokyo and everybody's probably very curious to hear how the situation in the art world in Tokyo is right now.
Yeah, it's a bit different in Tokyo than the rest of the world. Well, how are you, first of all? How's your family? Are you?
I'm fine.
I've been looking at the news coming out of Germany, and it's, you know.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we're basically fine. Everybody's, of course, worried, like I think the rest of the world.
On lockdown right now? Did you have to close your space and everything?
Yeah, I have to close my space. I'm actually sitting in it right now. No visitors coming. Yeah, because I'm working here alone, with my manager, gallery manager, who is also my son. It kind of stays in the family. We're basically, the whole family is at home now, and we're still allowed to go out and buy some stuff, but
good.
Try to avoid social contacts and everything as much as possible. So the city is pretty quiet, and people are worried, but kind of friendly. That's an interesting thing. Everybody who is on the street is kind of friendly and smiling and saying, seeing, you know, because they, you know, because everybody's a little bit insecure about what's going to happen.
Good to be kind. Kindness is contagious.
But now back to you. How are you? And what are you doing in Tokyo?
Yeah, I'm fine. It's actually, we're coming up on a 3-day weekend here in Japan because it's spring equinox. It's a national holiday. But it's very calm here. A lot of people have been asking me about the situation with the virus here in Tokyo. And I think because they've been dealing with it in Asia the longest, so they've just kind of adapted to this new normal, I guess you could say. Here in Tokyo, we have 118 reported cases. I haven't looked at the news today. Well, it's evening now, but I mean, it just seems like every time I check it, it changes. But we have 118 reported cases in Tokyo. So for the most part, you have art museums, and Tokyo Disneyland has been shut down until the end of March or April. But most art galleries are actually open. Restaurants are open. People are out and about. They're going to work. The government is asking people to wear masks, like on the train or just in crowded places. But that's if you can even get them, because like I was at several convenience shops, and you know, there are signs that say they're all sold out of masks. But I think for the most part, people are just hopeful that it will get better, you know. And that's compared to the cases in Los Angeles, which is growing. But the population in Tokyo is also bigger by several million people. There's over 9 million people that live in Tokyo. So that's like, you know, not even 0.1% or something of people that are sick. So right now in Japan, the big conversation is whether the Olympics are going to be postponed or even canceled. The government's getting a lot of pressure to make a decision because the Olympics are supposed to happen at the end of July to August. I think July 24th is when the Olympics are supposed to happen.
The European Championship in football has already been canceled two days ago.
Yeah, so I think they're going to hold on to it for as long as they can, just because that's going to be a real hit for their economy, but we'll see. So, yeah, so that's kind of the buzz. But as for the reason I came out here, I originally came out here for Art Fair Tokyo, because I had some meetings there, and For your listeners who probably don't know anything about me, I'm a curator at Corey Helford Gallery, but I also manage a Japanese painter. Her name is Hikari Shimoda. And we had a lot of clients, and one of her gallerists here in Asia were attending Art Fair Tokyo. So we were going to go to that. And then this coming weekend was supposed to be Hong Kong Art Basel. So we were going to fly to Hong Kong. So then that got canceled. So things are just getting canceled or postponed. But I decided to stay because we're working on a collaboration with Marc Jacobs right now. Mm-hmm. And, you know, people are still going to work and taking meetings. And so I decided to stay for that. And now I'm just here, you know, since then, so much has developed. I mean, LA is in a real panic. So I decided to extend my trip.
It's more relaxed for you right now. It's more relaxed for you right now in Tokyo than you probably.
I mean, people to stay. Are anxious. It's a troubling situation, but you know, it's. I don't want to say people have adjusted because it's really hard for everybody, but you know, they've had time to come to terms with what's happening. So, it's just the new normal.
But you said that meetings are still taking place and mm-hmm. galleries are still open. And do they still have openings? I mean, like vernissages and stuff?
No. Well, it's sort of optional. A lot of people are opting not to have opening receptions. Like I was at Kaikeikiki Gallery here in Tokyo earlier this week, and mm-hmm. they have a new show up right now with a painter by the name OB, and they canceled the reception because of the situation. And so they're live streaming from their gallery every day. OB is actually painting in the gallery every day, and they've been live streaming during opening hours. And now with the situation in Los Angeles, Corey Helford's going to start doing the same thing. So, I think the art world is a place that doesn't necessarily operate as well digitally because you need people to gather, you know? A lot of galleries are working around that. And I think art is, you know, super important in times like these. Just the flood of bad news and, you know, the bombardment of images, it makes people long for safe places. So I think what we need to do is just to help keep the artists and the galleries going.
Yeah, and how do you do that? I mean, Corey Helford mm-hmm. is basically your main gallery.
Yes. It's the only gallery that I'm a curator for. It's a full-time 24/7 job.
Yeah.
We're three galleries in one. Sure. We're a 12,000 square foot space in downtown Los Angeles. So, between that and Hikari, I've got my hands full. But we were brainstorming today about, how can we work around this situation and just, you know, coming up with ideas of how we can reach people online, whether Instagram Live or, you know, posting videos and things like that. It's a tough one. I mean, artists and not just artists, I mean, musicians and all entertainers, like they're getting hit really hard. And I would just say to anybody listening, like, if you have a favorite artist or a band right now, like, just do what you can to support them. Like, consider buying their merch if you can. Or, you know, some artists have, like, Patreon. Like, just do what you can because, mm-hmm. you know, it's really important to keep the artists supported right now.
Yeah, I think one thing that a lot of people overestimate that are not working in this business is that they think that the online market is very strong, mm-hmm. and with Artsy and all these large companies, sort of presenting work that you can actually buy online, it's still not very common for people to really purchase online. I mean, if you have a standing relationship with a client, yes, mm-hmm. you know, so that works. That's work works nicely. Sending them even old school PDFs with artworks, talking them through, or just sending images, and then they might decide. But new clients or mm-hmm. people who are not necessarily used to, they still need to take a look at the work, and that is something that we have to, in my opinion, work on right now. How not change.
I mean, there's not many different ways how we can present art online. We can mm-hmm. show it online. We can make photos. We can make videos. We can stand in front of it. We can talk about it. Mm-hmm. We can make 3D images. We can make augmented realities that you can present it in your room. Fine, but that's mm-hmm. it.
Yeah,
you know, that's the end of it. It's still not seeing it live. So now it's premium every time where we can ask people, able to purchase artwork, just to go and buy it now, you know, sort of change the behavior mm-hmm. of having to see it in person, because I mean there's a lot of careers at stake in the whole entertainment industry, but you know, also in our arts. I mean, and what do you think if Corey Helford has to, I mean, there's probably a couple of people working for the gallery. I mean,
we're a small family, but it's myself as the main curator, and then Sherry mm-hmm. Trahan is our amazing, amazing sales director and gallery director. And then Sarah Folkman, who's a painter herself, she's in charge of shipping and receiving. And then we have a great mm-hmm. team we work with who helps with installation and lighting. Mm-hmm. But we're a small family, and we're doing all that we can right now. Right now, the gallery's closed through. We opted to close the gallery by appointment only before kind of the panic really started mm-hmm. to set in and the mandated lockdowns in Los Angeles. And so we had already made the decision to do that just because we want to take every precaution possible. So we're closed by appointment only through April 7th, and we're just hoping, you know, everything will get back to normal.
Yeah, it's everything's different. So also this podcast is different, and maybe, you know, sort of when it's all has calmed down, maybe later this year we can make a normal one, an ordinary one.
Post, yeah,
when you're in Los Angeles,
Corona edition.
Yeah, exactly. Also, it's interesting then to see what changed for gallery, or if you're working closely with one artist,
mm-hmm.
it's also a very interesting relationship to look into.
I feel really fortunate. I was working with Hikari first before.
Yeah.
Corey Helford. That was kind of my gateway to working with Corey Helford, because the first show I curated for Hikari was her 2014 solo show at Corey Helford. And that kind of was the introduction to Jan and the Corey Helford team. And they brought me on later as a curator. So Hikari's a really big part of my life.
But so how did that happen? I mean, was it out of
a friendship? We met through mutual friends. No, we had mutual friends in Japan. I had an opportunity to come out to Tokyo in the early 2000s. I've had a relationship with Asia since the early 2000s, and I met Hikari in 2012, and we just became close. And so I kept coming back, and I formed a relationship with more artists and galleries here in those really early days. And Hikari and I have this long lasting relationship. So when I curated her first show in the States, it didn't really feel like we were diving into the unknown, or I didn't really feel like I was diving into the unknown. It was certainly a point of entry for me to be working with Corey Helford and other really amazing artists. And now we have several Asian artists on the roster now.
Okay. So if it mm-hmm. works like an agency, or then, or is it just with,
just one-on-one, just helping Hikari. I do everything for her. I check her email. I run her social media. I negotiate contracts for her. I help her secure licensing deals. So she's got a collaboration she's working on with Mickey Mouse right now. And then hopefully end of 2021, 2022, we have the Marc Jacobs collaboration that we're just starting to plan. We keep each other busy. I'm at Corey Helford, and you know, with Corey Helford working with such a great team, I have the capacity to help more artists that I love. So, because mm-hmm. It's a big job, so I wouldn't be able to help everybody in the same capacity. But with a great team, I'm able to do that.
When did you decide that this is art that you want to work with? Did you?
I grew up wanting to be an animator. I went to school for animation. I loved Ariel from The Little Mermaid, and mm-hmm. I wanted to do that. And Glenn Keane, who animated Ariel, was like my idol. And It was like torture going through high school, and all I wanted to do was just get there, you know. And I was on the path. So I, right out of college, I got a job in animation and started doing that. And I worked my way up to be a background painter. And around that time, went to Japan. And then once I came here, I just fell in love and I never looked back. So
yeah. Oh, it's great if you can. I mean, there's a lot of people who have the dream to work in arts and be an illustrator or a painter or an artist. And when you actually end up in the end working in this field, then it's a nice thing, you know. So it's
great
to end up there because it's something that you probably do with a passion.
Totally. Yeah, I have this saying, you know, don't follow your dreams, follow your effort, because you know dreams don't work unless you do. I think they're really good words to live by.
Yeah.
Yeah. Kind of make your own way.
Yeah. And, but now you sort of like, when you work at Corey Halford, you're saying the main curator is like you, decide is probably the wrong word. You just come up with the ideas and the artists that should take part in exhibitions.
I'm always on the lookout for new artists, and I'm finding new artists everywhere, and they're inspiring me in terms of putting together, you know, the larger exhibits, like the big, you know, 100 artist group exhibitions. I get really inspired by what they're doing. And then, you know, we have artists that we want to support with their solo exhibitions, and we'll work with them on a concept and, you know, provide them as much feedback as we can. But I'm always on the lookout for artists. And I was the online editor for High Fructose Magazine for a short time. And really, you know, that was kind of my education and how to look at art.
I believe a couple of years back, you wrote about one of our exhibitions that I was doing with Victor Castillo here.
Victor's amazing. He's a good friend. Victor.
Victor and I know each other. I think the first exhibition we did together was in 2007.
Oh, I love him. He's a sweetie pie. Yeah.
And every other year, we did it twice now, of course. Twice. We do an exhibition which is called Weapons of Mass Seduction, where we both team up. You know, we do two exhibitions, my work and his work, besides the gallery. Yeah. You know, so I'm an artist too. So that's basically how we started the gallery. Yeah. So, and that's always really, really great exhibitions, because not only we're friends and we're happy to be able to show together, but it's also because it's a lot of energy between us too. We're not just, we don't have his works in one part of the room and my work in the other part. We really mix them because they work together, you know, in a way, even though we're different, but it's kind of, I think the stories we tell, I don't know.
And that's true. I mean, it's a 50-50 relationship, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's always nice. And, but
that's
now,
so cool.
Yeah. And, but now if you're talking about group exhibitions with 100 artists,
well, they're rare, but they do happen. You know, we celebrated, Hello Kitty's birthday. She had a big birthday party at the gallery recently. I think I'm still emotionally recovering from putting that show together, but that was a lot of fun. That was a big show.
Yeah,
we had like over 3,000, I think it was thousands of people. I want to say like over 3,000 people came to the opening. And people were lined up until we closed the doors. So it was amazing. But it's a big space to fill too. It's it's a 12,000 square foot space that is comprised of three different galleries. So it's more like the Corey Halford Museum, but I'm tasked with filling it up every 5 weeks. So
so that's your regular schedule?
So we have new exhibits that we debut every 5 weeks, and we're booking shows through 2023 right now. So I'm on a hamster wheel. I'm always working on something. I love to credit High Fructose, because I really got my start. You know, writing really taught me how to look at art, and just like how to look past technique and into the heart of whatever the artist is creating and see the true value in that. And, you know, I think that's what the people at High Fructose, they do all day, every day. So it's really not unlike curating. So And Attaboy, who's the editor and the co-founder, he'll tell you, like, my writing when I started was terrible. And he gave me a chance. He saw something in me anyway. And I'm a testament to the fact that, you know, with enough hard work, you can do anything. You can be a writer, you can be a curator. I love to credit them as much as I can.
Yeah, I mean, it's about the angle how you look at the work, you know. Yeah. This and that's probably, I mean, pretty specific with people that have a background like yours and are not like trained writers or journalists.
I'm not a trained anything.
and it's pretty hard. Me neither. and it's pretty hard, I think, to write about facts in art. As I mean, you write about an artwork or an artist. I mean, of course, there are facts in art, but
challenging, because I'm asked a lot this question of how to define art, you know, which I feel like art writers are tasked with, is how to describe art, you know, how to define, well, in High Fructose's case, new contemporary art. And that's always such a tricky question to answer, because, you know, today new contemporary represents such a huge range of aesthetics now. You know, it's the new. So I was talking about them having this exact conversation, and, you know, we were saying it's probably better just to call it art. because, you know, new contemporary, whether it's pop surrealism or lowbrow or whatever you want to call it, is kind of, you know, it's been taking inspiration from pop culture and pop culture, you know, and then becoming pop culture itself. And, you know, it's this ongoing cycle. So
that's probably also why you actually work so much with brands, you know, like Hello Kitty and Marc Jacobs. And
yeah, they're not very part of pop culture. So
yeah, it's something actually that's not very deeply rooted in German art. Our German art is always trying to be serious on an educational level, and it's changing a little bit. But that's one of the reasons why I've opened Helium Cowboy many years ago, because I was missing exactly that here in Germany. As soon as you call something pop in Germany, unless it's really official pop art, which then people use reference Andy Warhol with, and all, you know, sort of modern contemporary artists, there was always a better, an easier approach in America, and I tried to bring that to Germany at that point. And I think that's something that, when you say new contemporary, we have that on our. We have like tapes, like, you know, where we wrap up the artworks with. In a couple of years, we didn't want to have much text on there, so we wrote beside our key sentence, which is "Cowboy's work is never done." We wrote "new contemporary art," just because that was coming up, and I thought that's kind of hitting the nail in some part. But yeah, I mean, for people who need something to label something, it's also not, you know, perfect.
I mean it's almost impossible, but it does come in handy to have labels. I don't necessarily agree with labels, but I think they open a door for people to have a basic understanding, and then they can dive deeper into the work. Going back to what you were saying just about, you know, how these contemporary styles influence each other, just even between pop culture, between different countries. I mean, like, we're living in a world right now where technology and social media make this exposure possible, and you're getting a lot of cross-pollination happening between artists. And like, maybe this evolution couldn't happen in the same way as before, like in the Andy Warhol generation, because they didn't have social media. So it's a really interesting time, and it's really exciting to watch, I think.
Yeah, I think that the accessibility through social media, especially and through the internet, has changed a lot, you know. But
yeah, it's a double-edged sword for sure.
How do you mean?
Well, I think accessibility can be a good thing and a bad thing. You know, definitely in terms of how artists are approaching galleries, especially, you know, I like if just to offer some advice for younger artists, because, you know, I think I've seen this trend of younger artists feeling like they could spam a gallery maybe with their art is just the worst way to get a gallery's attention, or, you know, to tag a gallery in 100 of your photos thinking that's a way to submit your work. I think it creates bad habits. I always like to encourage people to remember to be kind and be professional and just to be educated about the galleries you're hitting up, and take the time to politely ask what their submission policies are, and don't hit on me or try to butter me up with flattery because I'm a woman, because that's not going to work either. And like, yes, it happens. Like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah,
there's a right way and a wrong way to use social media. So.
Yeah, I think that's always a question, of course, because I think most of my listeners too are artists, and it's, of course, it's always a question, how do, as an artist, do I get into a gallery? And yes, I agree, it's not easy, but it's also not helpful when you're bombarding people with artwork. Most galleries have that on their website too. I mean, also one of the first thing I think is always very important as an artist to go at the website, look at the other artists, look at the exhibitions. Do I really fit in there? That's also what's happening. A lot of artists sending submissions where you think, well, but did you ever look at any of our photos on our website or on Instagram?
Exactly.
This is not the art we're representing, not at all.
Exactly. And I think, you know, with the emergence of social media too, people start to ask questions like, you know, do we even need art galleries? And I hate this question, because I feel like anyone asking doesn't fully understand the scope of what galleries even do. Like, and I get it. I mean, you know, we're in a new world now where pretty much all artists and art buyers with an internet connection and social media have access to each other. Like, everything has changed. The whole landscape has changed. But, you know, there's primary functions of galleries, which are providing artists with exposure for their art, which they can get from social media. And providing collectors and buyers with access to that art. But there's also the function of just raising an artist up and providing them with the guidance that they need and opportunities outside of their exhibitions. Like, I just got off the phone with a new artist we're showing who's, she's going to some amazing places very quickly and in her career. And she was asking me for advice about showing her work in Europe. And like at Corey Helford, for example, we're not just showing well-known and established artists, but we also want to support the growth of emerging artists. And they get special access to somebody who's really passionate and knowledgeable and understands the climate when they're working with the gallerist, as opposed to just posting art on their Instagram account. And I 100% believe in art as an experience that needs to be seen in person. It changes your perspective entirely. Like, for instance, I curated an installation by Pip and Pop. Are you familiar with Pip and Pop? Yeah, from based out of Australia. She's amazing. And we made this installation out of 700 pounds of sugar. That was incredible. And you had to be there to truly, appreciate the scope of that. It's beautiful on Instagram, but in person, like, it was emotional. It's emotional. And galleries, they bring people together. They create community, and you just don't get that through a screen. So.
Yeah. So I totally agree. I mean, this is a lot of the work that we're having. I mean, there's definitely some work that works on a screen, even on a tiny screen, but it's the minimum amount of art that's out there. I mean, it's most of that we're working with, there's structure, there's also the light that changes when you're in front of it or during the day. And I mean, if you buy a painting, you buy it for a long time, maybe for your whole life, and in different environments than a gallery wall with perfect lighting. So all these things, you know, that come into play. And when it goes into a sculptural piece, or look in my case, when I do woodcut, I mean, I carve into the painting, into the wood with knives, and it's on Instagram, it always looks like a graphic. And that's like
two-dimensional.
But
I really appreciate it.
But now these days we kind of have, that's the only thing we still have left for some time, you know, and we... You know, I think that's...
obviously the situation we're in is abnormal. but you know, it won't be like this forever.
No, totally. I agree. So and then what do you recommend artists that, I mean, if you're a young mm-hmm. artist and you're listening to this now and you say, well, she sounds really nice and I don't want to go on her nerves and you know, sort of, but I'd really like her to see my work. How do you see new artwork? How do you discover it?
I find art everywhere. I'm constantly always looking. I think I get this just from like just going back to my high fructose days, you know. I'm finding artists on social media. I'm going to as many shows as I can. I'm finding their work in person. I'm going to art fairs. I'm out here right now. You know, I was going to go to Art Fair Tokyo. Obviously that was canceled, but I'm still going to galleries here. Galleries are open. I'm still going to shows and connecting with artists here. So I'm out here, you know, and I have a passion for that and it drives me. And so I'm putting myself out there. And I think for younger artists, just don't, I guess what I would say is, don't worry so much about what everybody else is doing and just focus on yourself and your own path and your own voice. Because for me as a curator, the most attractive thing is, does the artist have a unique voice? It's not always about their skill level. So I would really focus on just honing in on that. And, you know, with each work, you're only going to get better.
Yeah, it's very well put. Yeah, I can agree to that. Yeah, it's also, I mean, everybody who picks out art for shows has a different approach to it. I personally feel privileged that I can do that, that I can make decisions on who I'd be interested in showing. But it always comes, I mean, basically because out of my curiosity that I see you work somewhere and that then if I'm interested, I go deeper and, you know, see more work. If I can, I go to an exhibition. But then I think you're more privileged being in Los Angeles with much more artists going through than in Hamburg. You know, I mean, we're a nice city and it's a beautiful city.
Yeah, I mean, we're fortunate that we, you know, are in a time where we have access. We have, you know, more access to each other just from the internet or social media or whatever. But yeah, I mean, I'm very lucky. I consider myself very lucky to be in Los Angeles. We have an amazing community and a really great scene there. You know, it just when I, as since I first moved there, it was amazing. I mean, pop surrealism, when I first moved to Los Angeles, was just exploding. And it was just coming out of from being more than underground art. Like you had artists like Camille Rose Garcia and Mark Ryden and Todd Shore, and they were all showing in the top art galleries, and many other artists were just having their first shows, like Amy Soul, Brandy Milne, Camilla D'Errico, like artists that I'm so fortunate to work with now. And I was just, you know, there in the middle of it, soaking it all in. I don't even know if he'll remember this, but he'll laugh if he's listening to this. But I met the artist Gary Baseman on the street in Santa Monica on my first weekend after I had moved to Los Angeles, and he was so cute and he drew me a map to one of his shows, and there was no iPhones because this was like back in 2006. There was no iPhones, no map, and he drew me a map with his little characters on it to one of his shows, but that couldn't happen anywhere else because I was in Los Angeles. And now Gary and I, like, we hang out and we go hiking together, but
all right. Well, so hi to Gary, because I think I met him too when in around this 2004, 2005, 2006. I remember Gary being shown at Iguapop in Barcelona, the gallery that we worked really closely with, and I remember Gary being at one of the fairs that we had a booth, and he introduced himself and brought a really nice book and made a drawing in there, and we chatted for a long time when he went through his sketchbook. So you got a glimpse of what he's all about, of what his work is about, what his character is about, in a, I don't know, 20, 30 minute talk. And we've met afterwards on social occasions, but that was like the first time we really got into his work. And I miss that a little bit, because that is happening very rarely, because everybody just gives you your handle, check it out on Instagram, you know, see what I'm doing. But well, that's not the same.
After this whole, you know, pandemic situation calms down, you can come out to LA and visit us. We'll go hiking together.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's a plan for a long, long time. a lot of friends of mine live in Los Angeles, not just Victor. But there's there's a lot of artists that I've met over the years, and also friends with you have moved to Los Angeles a couple mm-hmm. of years ago, and mm-hmm. we haven't seen each other in a while. I'm currently having the privilege of having a trip down memory lane, because I am writing a book which is partly autobiographic and part image book, part art book, and the autobiographic part spans the development of my art, of my personal art, but that also coincides with Helium Cowboy, because they're both me and Helium Cowboy. It's not, you can't separate it. You can't say it's a gallery and this person, but it's basically one. Everything I do is one person in a way. And so,
right, so, I know we're all doing the work of 100 people.
So. Yeah, so it's intertwined, but because of that, I go through old photo albums and through from exhibitions and everything, and then all these memories come back, like you know, as I said, with Gary, there's a photo of me somewhere with Gary on one of these fairs, and that's why it's so vivid, it's so present. And you think about, I haven't spoken to this person in such a long time, you know, and because it's a long time after all. But it's really nice to recapture those days. And very often, while I'm writing this book now, while I'm writing these stories from the past, I think about what a great story that would have been on Instagram, but only the people who were there actually really experienced it.
Yeah, I think it makes these little moments in time more sincere mm-hmm. because they happened organically. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a nice thing to think
about. I'm probably dating myself a little bit, but.
Sorry, what?
I said I'm probably, you know, dating myself a little bit, because I didn't grow up with the, you know, the internet or anything like that. So. Yeah, I was a late bloomer. So.
Yeah, also this is it's
I still
still
am. I only just discovered Squadcast like 30 minutes ago. So.
Yeah, but that's a totally different problem. The tools that we use to communicate for podcasts, but that's also like a really big thing. The whole podcast issue is just growing. I've been doing this for a little bit over 2 years now, and what has mm-hmm. happened in those 2 years already, you know, in terms of reach and how easy it is to produce one and do one. And I think it's the nice thing about a podcast is that we've been talking now for about 45 minutes, and people mm-hmm. take the time to listen to us talk for that long. Whereas a normal Instagram interaction is probably like a second, you know?
Right. Yeah.
All right. When are you going back to LA?
That's a really good question. Yeah. Right now, I've extended my trip through April. Our gallery, all being well, is going to reopen April 7th. And we have an exhibit that's supposed to open April 11th.
Yeah.
So, you know, hopefully things have settled, and I can go home. Okay. I mean, I can go home, but right now everybody's in lockdown. So I'm just mm-hmm. sort of, you know, taking my time. I'm also a little anxious about the situation at LAX airport, because they're like taking people's temperature when they get off the flights. And just, I'm hearing all sorts of crazy stories about people waiting in customs for 3 hours, and just there's all these horror stories. So, but yeah, all being well, I'll be back in 2 weeks, and in time to set up our next shows. Mm-hmm. I'm just really just remaining hopeful, and you know, trying to stay calm, stay positive, just for you know, encouraging my friends to do the same. You know, I guess for anybody listening, I don't know when this podcast is going to come out, but, you know, hopefully for people listening, you know, they're just stay healthy and, you know, be safe, be kind to each other. I mean, it's a hard time for everyone. So be extra kind. And, you know, I'm just hoping I can get home soon and get back to work. Yeah.
But, yeah, totally. Mm-hmm. Totally agree. I mean, you know, sort of same to you. I mean, stay healthy, you know, and my recommendation is to, if it's more relaxed in Tokyo right now, stay there.
Yeah. And it's very calm here. I'm glad to be here, and I'm watching the news. I'm watching it very carefully. Everybody at home is watching the news, and you know, the gallery is just, we're just honoring the city's recommendations right now. You know, right now, Los Angeles isn't allowing large gatherings, or, you know, they're not recommending that people go. I mean, the restaurants have closed, so you know they're recommending that people stay home and, you know, mm-hmm. social distance is the word. We don't have that word here in Japan. You know, people are kind of laying low, but they're not. We don't have social distancing here per se. Like I was on Instagram earlier. I posted a photo with some friends of mine. People were like, "You're not 6 feet apart." And I was like, "I'm not in America." it's a little bit different here, but you know, but it's an anxious situation everywhere, and you know, we're all in this together, so
yeah,
we'll get through it though.
Okay. Thank you for talking to me today. Stay healthy.
Thank you so much for your time and for having me, and yeah, you too. Let's chat again when things are, you know, get better.
Yeah, we will. All right. Goodbye.
Okay, bye.
Well, thank you for listening today. I will be back with more talks shortly. If you have any questions for me or my guests, I'm happy to hear them all. Just send me a mail to hello@heliumtalk.com or a direct message on my Instagram @heliumcowboy. Stay safe and healthy, and take good care of everyone around you.